Rita Moreno is one of the rare artists to have won the Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony Awards for her multiple talents. Moreno was honored recently at the Kennedy Center for her lifetime of artistic achievements. As a Puerto Rican immigrant, she overcame numerous obstacles in show business and is perhaps best remembered for her iconic performance playing a character close to her own background, Anita, in Robert Wise's 1961 film adaptation of West Side Story. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Rita Moreno is a dancer, singer, actor, and best-selling author, and was a special guest of the 2013 Plaza Classic Film Festival. We discussed not only the making of West Side Story, but her upbringing as a young Puerto Rican immigrant in New York, and her rise through the often prejudicial show business ranks. The following was recorded live on the stage of the Plaza Theater on August 1st, 2013.
Your Anita is a Puerto Rican living in New York. And I know you have a lot of stories about it. We talked for hours last night about this film.
I talked his ear off.
And I loved it. But I want to back up to a different Puerto Rican girl. You, 5 years old, your mother brings you to New York City from Puerto Rico, leaves the family behind. And, you know, I was watching this the other night prepping for the festival, and I was thinking, a five-year-old child, those canyons of New York must have been very similar to these canyons we hear the whistling going down at the beginning of this film.
I had come from paradise, and I suddenly landed in this gray, gritty, ashy-looking city, and it was freezing. It was the middle of February, and it was so cold. The experiences were extraordinary. I mean, I'd never seen trees without leaves, for instance. You know, you don't think of things like that, do you? But I kept saying to my mama, ¿Qué pasó con los árboles? What happened with the leaves? And she just said, well, there's a thing here called winter, and this is it. And that's why you're wearing gloves and, you know, a coat and all that. It was an absolute mystery. Everybody was wrapped up, so it didn't seem a friendly environment. And all I could think of to myself was, my mother must be crazy. Why would we leave this amazing, beautiful, paradisical town and come to this? I soon found out, you know, that she just felt very strongly that life had to be better for her little girl than it was for her. She had a very tough life in Puerto Rico.
She must have been a tenacious mom because she, soon after you arrived, you were already taking dancing lessons. Were you just naturally out of the womb, every time you heard music you were performing?
I used to dance for Grandpa in Puerto Rico, and I'd shake my little booty. He'd put on a salsa or something. And a girlfriend of hers who was a Spanish dancer watched me bouncing around the apartment in the barrio, and she said to my mom, you know, I think Rosita might have a future as a dancer. Let me take her to my dancing teacher and see what he thinks. And that's how it all started.
And that first dancing teacher, I think, had also been the dancing teacher of Rita Hayworth.
No, he was her uncle.
Her uncle.
Paco Cancino.
This Rita will come back
uncle
later.
Uncle of Margarita Cancino. And she eventually changed it, you know, to Margarita Rita Hayworth, an American name, because there was nothing about her that looked terribly exotic or Latino. But if you see her with dark hair and a very low hairline before they fixed that, she looked more Latina. But he was like Spanish royalty.
For the next few years, you sort of worked your way up classes and dancing and singing and acting, and you were performing more and more.
I did it all. I did radio when radio still had, you know, radio had series like TV has series. And I remember particularly one that I used to do, a religious hour called the Ave Maria Hour. And it's one of my favorite stories because I was playing Bernadette. And, you know, many years later, they made a movie called The Song of Bernadette. And Bernadette is the young woman who saw a vision in a cave. And so I was the little girl in that radio program. I was Bernadette. And all I can remember is saying, but I tell you, I saw this lady in the cave. And they're saying, get that child out of here. She's mad. But I saw her. I saw her. Get her out of here.
As you were working your way up, at one point in your teenage years, you actually sort of became the bread rent winner of your household. You were touring and doing performances on your own.
I began to perform as a dancer when I was 16. I was performing way before that, when I was 5, 6, 7 years old. But I was actually getting paid for it when I was about 16, and I did, I danced my Spanish dances with castanets in nightclubs, mostly out of New York City because I was under 18, and it was illegal for a young person of 16 to be performing in places where they sold liquor and all that kind of stuff.
It's amazing. Somewhere along the line there, in a year or two, you picked up a gig in your first independent film in New York, and I guess caught the bug, because soon after that...
The film, I have to tell you the name, because it's such a horrible
name.
Yeah,
I love the name.
It was called So Young, So Bad.
Reform School Girl, right?
Reform School Girls. And my agent could never get the name right. So good, so young. So old, so perfect. He could never get it right. It was very embarrassing.
What's amazing is soon after that experience, I guess your mother and I and you found out that Louis B. Mayer was going to be in town.
I was discovered by a Hollywood talent scout, an actual Hollywood talent scout, who used to, like all talent scouts in sports, for instance, he used to go to all the things that were happening in the city, in New York. And he, you know, I was doing a, it wasn't even a gig, I wasn't paid for it. My dancing school was holding a recital. So the audience consisted of aunts, uncles, young brothers, sisters, cousins, moms and dads. That was the audience. They all came to see their kid perform. And a man named Dudley Wilkinson was there from MGM Studios. After he saw me dance, it was a Spanish dance with castanets. He came backstage and gave my mother his business card and said, I'm with MGM Studios. And, oh, my Lord, I thought I would die. That was that was the studio of my dreams, because it had all the great musical performers. It had Ann Miller, had Janie Powell, it had, everybody you can think of, Judy Garland. Yes. So he just gave her his card and he said, I'll call you when I think the time is right. And when Louis B. Mayer of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer came to New York City, I went to meet him, and I got a 7-year contract.
Based on
nothing. He was just taking the talent scout's word for it that I had talent.
Now, you didn't just go meet Louis B. Mayer. You and your mother decided that one of the great stars of the time already was Elizabeth Taylor.
She was my icon. Elizabeth Taylor was my icon because at that time there was no role model for a Hispanic girl or boy. None. So I chose her. She was to be my role model. And I did everything I could to resemble her as much as I could. The eyebrows, the hair, the waist cincher, extra bosom. She didn't have extra, but
not the violet eyes, though.
I managed to add a little bit of that. So when I went to meet Mr. Louis B. Mayer, the great wizard, who also, by the way, The Wizard of Oz was an MGM movie. The first thing he said when he saw me was, my God, she looks like a Spanish Elizabeth Taylor. And I went, oh. I was thrilled.
You were what, maybe 18 at
the
time?
Oh, no, I was 16.
16.
Yeah.
It seemed like you were aware, even at an early age, though, that as a Puerto Rican, as good as you were, that in that time, you didn't fit the mold. So you tried to remake yourself, at least for this interview, as Elizabeth Taylor.
No, absolutely. I spent a good part of my life trying to be anybody but me, as a matter of fact. And I had a terrible childhood. I mean, I can't tell you how often I was called spick and garlic mouth and, you know, all kinds of really terrible, terrible names. So by the time I came to see Mr. Mayer, I already knew that life was very difficult. It was certainly very difficult for people of another nationality. And let's not forget for a moment that I didn't come here speaking English. I didn't speak a word of English when my mother took me to kindergarten. And you cannot imagine how frightening it is. Well, maybe some of you can, to be thrown into an environment where there's nothing but another language and you have no way. Yeah, right? And so I have to tell you, I learned English really quickly because I understood that without the language, I would never make any kind of headway in this life. And I understood that really early.
It's amazing. Mayer offers her in that New York hotel room a 7-year contract. You and your mom move out to Hollywood.
We go to Hollywood, and my first day at MGM was astonishing. I had already been assigned a movie, a musical, with a very, very big star, popular tenor of the day, a singer named Mario Lanza. Oh, everybody's an old fart here. He was the Andrea Bocelli, you know, of his time. He was a huge star. So I was thrilled to be assigned to that movie. And I played his little girlfriend for a while until the leading lady got him. But the producer of that movie, I went to meet him at my very first day at MGM Studios. And he said, come on, kid. He put his arm around me. He said, I'll show you around the MGM lot. The first person he introduced me to was Clark Gable. I nearly wet my knickers. I thought I had died and gone to heaven. And I met all kinds of big stars. I went to the commissary for lunch with him, and there they were. There they were. Lana Turner was walking in, and Clark Gable, and Ava Gardner, and Judy Garland. I mean, it was just, it's hard to describe. But I was just absolutely speechless. It was amazing. I had died and gone to heaven, and this was my studio.
The studio that changed your name.
That's right. The casting director called me in about, a few weeks later. His name was Billy Grady, and he said, listen, dear, we got to change your name. He said, it's too Italian. Well, he was hearing Rosita Moreno, not Moreno. And he threw some really hilarious names at me. He said, what about Orchid Montenegro? Orchid Montenegro? And, you know, all kinds of, I can't remember the names now, but they're hilarious. They're in my book. So, by the way, I wrote a book. But we finally settled, because I kept saying, no. And finally he said, well, what about Rita? Think Rita Hayworth. And I immediately thought Paco Cancino, Margarita Cancino. And I thought, does that sound like, you know, like movie star name? And I thought, starring Rita Moreno. And I said, okay. And that's how it became Rita Moreno. My name is Rosa Dolores Alberio, and proud of it.
You've been listening to part one of my conversation with singer, dancer, actor, and author Rita Moreno, recorded live on the stage of the Plaza Theater on August 1st, 2013, before a screening of West Side Story. Miss Moreno was honored at the Kennedy Center in December for her lifetime of achievements, and you can see the Kennedy Center honors on CBS.com. Tune in next week as we conclude my conversation with Rita Moreno with a discussion about the making and impact of Robert Wise's 1961 film adaptation of West Side Story. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available online at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.